Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy, who's down at the corner of my screen, so I'll be looking down there. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm good. I am good.
One place I'm not is in Red Deer, which was the original plan. I even bought a ticket. I even bought a ticket for this game, and then the weatherman decided to get involved, and we had lovely snow rain mix and my greatest fear, freezing rain. And the thought of making a 4-hour round trip for a game that I could watch on the internet became less attractive. And then I started thinking about Humboldt Broncos and their last road trip, and I got spooked and I just said, I'm not going. So it bummed me right out. I would love to have seen that game live, even though in the end it wasn't that great of a game.
You're getting either you're getting old and cautious or old and wise, Bruce.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit of both, eh?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's the thought of driving in snow, especially when people have forgotten how to drive in snow, is not an appealing thought. So it can be kind of crazy. The first time there's a major snowfall, it could be crazy out there because everyone's like lost their mind and doesn't remember how to do it. So. Probably yeah. A good idea.
Well, especially when it's summertime and it's friggin' snowing out there. I mean, come on.
It's climate change, Bruce. Well,
something weird going on.
Okay, so today, Bruce, we went through a process where five of us went through, we rated all the Oilers prospects. We came to a consensus top 25 of Oilers prospects. And now we have new information on the majority of those prospects. Three games, and a lot of them played in those three games. There's my son just getting the Chippets, which he's taking to his room to gorge on Chippets. All right. He's a teenager. And so we have some new information. So today we're going to go through the players who played in at least one game and give them either arrows up or arrows down. So this isn't thumbs up or thumbs down of them as prospects. It's not some right. kind of all defining. It's kind of like based on the most recent news, you know, which is somewhat significant. Yeah. Or has their stock dropped. And we'll finish it all off, Bruce, with the Braden Christopher Award, which we will award to the player who has raised his stock the most in the last three games. Okay.
From off the board.
It could be on the board too. Anyone. Could be okay. Anyone. Yeah. Right. I think that was a little hint of who we've talked about this before and we agree on the player, but we won't.
I've got a different player now, and he's from off the board too. So.
Oh. Okay, change it. The old change up.
That's what. Yeah, I just looked at the list, and I know. Yeah, that guy.
The anyway, old Space Man Lee change up. I can't.
Braden Christopher. He came from nowhere, and he won a contract out of it. So.
And he has not exactly torn up the pea patch at the American Hockey League. Although he did earn he earned an AHL contract, that which surprised me based on his play. But they must have wanted his veteran presence on the fourth line this year at the AHL level. Okay, Bruce, so the first player on our list who actually played in one of those games was Joe Gambardella, who ranked number 24 on our list. And I'm going to give him an arrows up. I thought it was a good chance to see him, and that's as good as he's looked to me. He's an older player, but he's got a little bit of everything. He's got some speed, some skill. He doesn't have any size and some grit. So he's missing, I don't think he has an NHL skill, a skill that will make him an NHLer. I don't see him, honestly projecting as an NHLer. But, and he didn't have a particularly good year, but he did show some ability in these games.
He's got some breadth to his game. You know, he can kill penalties. He's got some offensive smarts, a half-decent passer of the puck. I would put him in the Chris Vandevelde class of NHL future, which is a guy that I really didn't think had one, and he surprised me, and he wound up playing about 4 years in the bigs. So Gambardella equally would surprise me, but I would just say it's not impossible. He's got some game.
The one thing Vandevelde has over Gambardella is about three or four inches and about 30 pounds, I think, 20, 30 pounds. Okay, Dylan Wells, number 23, Bruce.
I have to give a down arrow to the goalies. They just not good performances against Calgary. Now, Wells, of course, for his part, he only played the third period of game one against Calgary, and he got lit up for three goals, and he looked pretty shaky. And then he had two shutout periods against Nate McKinnon's brother there, Nate McEwen. And it was, he did what he could in that game. I think he made one nice stop, and that was about all he had to make. But I thought he was really shaky in that one appearance against Calgary. So tiny down arrow.
All right, tiny down arrow for me as well, and I don't have anything to add. Okay, next on our list who played is number 17, Cameron Hebig. And I'm going to give him... I'm actually going to give him a little bit of a down arrow. I know he scored that fantastic goal. He just sniped it in, but I've seen that skill from him before. I know he can do that. It was good he did that. But other than that, I didn't see a lot of impact on the game. Didn't see, you know, the skating is above average. He can get around and he's got some skill, but he didn't have a big impact on these games. He didn't really assert himself other than that one really super nice snipe of a shot tonight.
Yeah, I made a nice couple nice little bursts in on the net. I'm just going to give him a little tiny plus arrow just so we can disagree on something here as we go. And it's all about that wicked shot. Man, oh man. That was a goal scorer's snipe right there. And puck was on his stick and it was in the top corner before you knew it. Bang. So... But, he's a long shot, but at least he showed his primary skill. And at a time in the game where, you know, it was actually an important goal, as these things go, in terms of pulling Edmonton back into the battle that they were spinning their wheels in at that point.
William Lagesson, Bruce, what do you give him?
Oh, I like William Lagesson, but I didn't really love his game, especially tonight. I thought he got burned a little bit, and... he missed, of course, the first game. And against Nate McEwen, I kind of like the business where he had a running battle against one or two guys on the Nate team. And I think that's kind of his forte. But tonight there was just a couple of lost battles, turnovers inside of his own blue line. And not enough that I saw positive compared to where I would have ranked him in the first place, which of course is what we're doing. Is he shown better than what we expected? And I thought that was pretty flat, but we don't have a vote for flat, so I'm going to give him a down arrow.
I'm going to give him a down arrow as well. He played in Swedish Pro League last year, which is, I guess, equivalent to the AHL pretty much in terms of quality of competition, similar to that. He was got a lot of playing time there. What I was hoping to see from him was really solid physical defense. I was okay with that, but I think I was hoping to see a bit more fluidity in terms of just moving the puck. And he did okay in that regard, but he didn't really stand out or impress in any way. I mean, his partner, who isn't considered a prospect, looked like Kulovich, I think was his name. Was that it? He looked about as good as Lagesson. I mean, there really wasn't much separating the two. So, I'm going to give him a down arrow. Olivier Rodrigue, the goalie, down arrow for me. I think one or two of the goals in the first period tonight were not great. He made some saves after that, but .
Yeah, he bounced back in the second. And it was, shaky start. I mean, at one point I was going, man, can anybody around here make a save? Because this was the same issue that we had on Sunday. And, of course, Rodrigue didn't play in that game, so you can't sort of give him the guilt by association mark. But tonight, he got lit up for three in the first frame. And the Oilers were fighting an uphill battle. And, you know, they did battle back to even the count by the time he left the game. But I wouldn't suggest he was a particularly positive influence on the game overall.
Dmitry Samarukov. And Bruce, when I was thinking of tonight's segment, like thinking, what are we going to talk about? It was with him in mind. He came to mind, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he was Sean Patrick Ryan, in his review of number 10, Dmitry Samarukov, talked about the good Dima and the bad Dima. And tonight we saw some of the former and more of the latter. And in Calgary on Sunday, we saw almost entirely the latter. He was dreadful in that first game. And tonight, I mean, he was on the ice for all three of those Calgary goals in the first period and directly responsible for the first one, probably, and just kind of marginally negligent on the other two. But then he made a good play to stand up a Calgary rush and get the play reversing in the right direction that led to a goal that made it 3-1. And then he earned an assist on the tying goal by jumping up into a 2-on-1 and making a good hard shot that the rebound got converted by Evan Poli to tie the game. So he at least sort of started working his way out. But man, defensively, he was a tire fire.
I don't have much more to add. He just seemed to really lack confidence in that game. And to me, hockey games are, you know, your great players can win you games, but the guys, when they're going bad, they will lose you games. You know, the weak links on your team will kill you in a game. And this was a weak link game for the Oilers. They couldn't get big saves out of their goalies. And they had about at least three defensemen who were constantly making mistakes and caught out of position. And Samarukov was one of them. And the other two were guys nothing is expected of. But Samarukov is a highly rated player, and he did not perform well at all. And again, he just seemed absolutely lacking in confidence. So
he's a project.
Yeah, everyone expects him to go back to the OHL. Project. That's right. So with all these guys, this is just like, you know, this is one point on the graph of their development, and it will go up and down and up and down and up and down, and we'll see where it ends up in the end. Cooper Marody, I'm going to give him a plus arrow. Mm-hmm. I thought he really won a lot of puck battles, and that was impressive because I see him as a real skill player, and he showed his skill. There was different times where he kind of showed that separation, deftness with the puck, shooting ability. I thought they really missed him tonight on the ice. He's their best center, and I think he's well positioned to crush it in the AHL this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. He's a plus hero for me as well. We did see, I think his Achilles heel is his skating and his wheels. And there was one play in one of the games where he had a partial breakaway and the defender overtook him from behind and there no shot happened. On the other hand, he scored a goal on a really nice shot. He's got a hard shot. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but he really lets it rip, and he's going to test goalies with that thing. My favorite play that he made was, I think it was on the 8-0 goal last night, so just for a little context. But where he came in with, I can't remember who the winger was who was busting to the net front.
McLeod?
Yes. And Marody held the puck, and he held it just long enough, and he shifted his stick position, opened the passing lane, and boom, the pass was right through, right on the tape, and tapped into the net. Like, that was a first-rate pass of a guy who sort of created his passing lane and then executed the pass. And he's got very, very nice puck skills.
There is a chance that I think he is going to the AHL, but he's one of these guys who could go down there and get, you know, 26, 27 points in 30 games and be up on the wing sometime this season. That could easily happen with Cooper Marody this year. All right, Tyler Benson.
Oh, that's a huge up arrow.
The biggest
up arrow. Yeah, biggest up arrow. He came in and played very well. Made those three great backhand passes that you featured in the post you wrote on about Sunday's game. And then he came out last night against Nate McKinnon's brother and scored two assists on nice passes and then a goal. And then after that, he was less involved in the game, but the game wasn't that involving. You know what I mean? And he's got some, man, he's got some nice skill with the puck, and when I see him, I keep seeing him winning puck battles along the boards. And I like guys that can do that.
He's a tough, smart, skilled hockey player. And, you know, his skating isn't great. And I think he's going to be in the AHL all year. That's what I'm expecting, that we won't see him this year. Which is fine. But just stay healthy and keep doing what you're doing, Tyler Benson, and you will have a future in the NHL, because I could just envision him playing, fitting in so well as a complimentary player on a line with McDavid or Draisaitl, because those guys they're so deadly and fast. And if you can get a guy who can, where the puck doesn't die on his stick, and he can get them the puck, well, that's the definition, I think, of Tyler Benson. Could be the definition of Tyler Benson as an NHLer, kind of that third wheel on a line with two faster players, you know, kind of the, from the 1980s, kind of the Willie Lindstrom, Esa Tikkanen role, the Mark Napier role. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Mark Napier. And that kind of player who's just fitting in with two really high-flying players, but that's an important job. And
somebody who can dig the puck out and keep the play alive and find the danger man. You got to like that kind of player. I was even going to go back further into the 70s and talk about not Zach Parise, but his dad, J.P. Parise, as a guy, just win those quarter battles, you know, and dig out those, make those passes out and find the open man. And anyway, that's
obligatory 1970s sports reference, Bruce. Although I did bring up Bill Lee earlier, so. I brought up Bill Lee earlier, so that's two. We've got two in this podcast. We usually make six or seven. All right. Stuart Skinner, poor Stuart Skinner down there, obviously. I mean, poor guy. He just really didn't stop anything of note and let in some bad ones. And, you know, if he had stopped that breakaway tonight, I think the game was still tied then. And
that was the breakaway.
That was for him the big moment, and he just – so it's hard to know what to make. Like, you don't want to make too much of it. On the other hand, it would have been nice if he had made more of this moment, but he did not. And
he was the one goalie that appeared in each of the two games against Calgary, and he got lit up both times. So it's pretty hard to find a positive arrow in that.
Caleb Jones.
Ooh, huge up arrow. Huge up arrow. He's challenging, in my books, Tyler Benson for being the most sort of, hey, maybe this guy's got more upside than we've been giving him credit for. And I mean, just outside the top five on our list, and had a little bit of a down season last year. So, I mean, a couple of games doesn't really rank against that. Other than that, it looks like he might be turning the corner. Like, he had his skating wheels going, and he was really involved in the offense, like very involved in the offense in both games. And he piled in, 7 points in two games from the blue line?
I mean, I love that story where he talked to Paul Coffey. Uh-huh. And, you know, the Oilers old timers, like now the Hall of Famers, they get kind of a, like, there's a little bit of a jaundiced look, I think, from a lot of people at them, and, you know, the constant looking back. But someone like Paul Coffey can give good advice. Yeah. And the advice he gave to Caleb Jones, like, just like go in there to camp this year and make up your mind you're stealing somebody's job. I mean, I think attitude is so, and confidence is so important in life and in pro sports and in everything. And I just think we're seeing Jones references, and I just think we are seeing a much more confident Caleb Jones who's decided he's going to be a difference maker in games. Mm-hmm. And he's got the NHL skill of skating. And he looks to me like, well, you know, if Darnell Nurse isn't in the opening lineup, Caleb Jones might be. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad. That's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. But Caleb Jones looked like he can play in the NHL, maybe sooner than later. And definitely, I would definitely, he and Bear have always been close in the rankings. I think he just shot ahead of Bear again slightly, like, you know, strangely enough, even though Bear got, like, I'm sure in the Oilers organization they still value Bear more. Like the NHL coaches know him and. Or the NHL coach knows him. McClellan, all the other ones, the other coaches are now gone.
Well, but he may well wind up coaching Bear, of course, this season. So
But Jones was just wheeling with the puck. Mm-hmm. All right. Ryan McLeod. My turn to go first. Ryan McLeod was a definite up arrow. And this builds on his performance at the development camp. He's a bullet out there. He's got good hands. He can make plays. He had lots of, he probably had as many scoring chances as anyone on the team. He was flying up and down the ice. He reminds me a lot of Tyler Pitlick, big, fast, strong, aggressive, straight line kind of player. And I think that he has an NHL future if he, and again, maybe sooner than later, not this year, but Pitlick's big thing was he kept getting hurt. If McLeod stays healthy, he just looks like an NHLer to me.
Well, the wheels, eh? And I mean, and he's a big strapping kid. There was a play tonight where he picked up a puck in his own line, and I think he was still sort of just coming out of the face-off circle in his own end, and I'm thinking to myself, he's gone. And he just came flying up the wing, and he tried to cut in. He wound up just sort of banging a puck into the goalie's pads without any angle, but the fact was that there was no angling him off in the neutral zone at all. The next chance they had at him was at the face-off circle at the other end, and that was just kind of to push him off to the outside a little bit. And what I like about what I've seen of McLeod is that he uses his speed in both directions, and he really rips around in the defensive zone too, which sometimes you see these speedy forwards, and they get in their own end, and they get anchored to some spot on the ice or something. And maybe they'll teach him how to do that, but... he likes to use his major asset, which is his wheels.
He did have a few defensive zone coverage issues, I noticed, in the game. I mean, I wasn't breaking down the video to really zero in on who was making the mistakes, but I did notice a few times that he was out there and he could have been covering someone and he wasn't. But it's interesting to me that he is a center. He's not a winger at this point. So, and apparently he's good at face-offs. And so he's a big guy. And, man, if he can actually play center, and handle that like as a, you know, a third kind of the third line center of the future on the Oilers. Yeah, that puts a smile on my face to think about it. Like it's great to have a player like this, a center, a big, fast center in the pipeline. So good draft pick by the Oilers. Ethan Bear.
Could be a good penalty killer too. Ethan Bear, for me, gets a little bit of a down arrow for the two games that he played, and all the defensemen played two games. They had 9 defensemen and 6 spots per game, so they circled through all of them. And Bear, I just saw him sort of okay. He had some good moments in the first game and moving the puck and that. Defensively, less great, and not really had any chances to let his big shot through. Maybe if we'd seen a little more of that, we'd be feeling a little happier. He was better on Sunday than he was tonight, and tonight he was not much of a factor in this game. And you really expect a player of his pedigree, you know, and his place along the curve, the development curve, to be among the better players in the ice. And if he was, it escaped my notice.
Me too. Down arrow for me. Now, I think he was most effective by the lack of a solid partner. I think he was paired in both games that I saw with players who were really struggling out there with their decision making.
Tonight he got 81, didn't he?
Moran, yeah, the guy with two names.
Jared Wilson?
Wilson. No, it was Wilson.
Olivier Crevier Moran, the guy with four names.
And four great goals.
Nugent Hopkins, because this could get out of hand in a quick hurry. What happens when the hyphenated names start hyphenating?
You're right. Crevier, Moran, Nugent Hopkins. Anyway, you can't say nothing about the world we live in, Bruce. Everything's good, man.
Just an idle thought. I'm noticing when he has a hyphenated first and last name. Yeah, you get down a couple more generations, and this just goes crazy.
Do you, Ryan? Janine Nugent Hopkins, Crevier Moran, take. Of course, there won't be weddings by then. All right. Ethan Bear. I just I like them. I he's a smart player, obviously. He's really good with the puck. But the issue that just keeps coming out again and again with me is his skating. Mm-hmm. And he's got to get better at skating. He's got to get faster. He's got to get more agile. And if he's going to, you know, I heard someone the other day comparing him to Ryan Ellis. And I said, geez, come on. Like, Ryan Ellis can really, really, he impacts the game so much with his move. He's like Caleb Jones, right? Like the way he skitterbugs around the ice. That's not Bear right now. And he is a very smart player. I think he's going to have a really good year at the AHL level. But I definitely, like I don't see him as an NHLer this year. He needs at least another year in the AHL. And I think he's going to get it. And hopefully he'll keep working on his skating. I do think I'm seeing incremental improvement, but it's just not there yet. And, you know, maybe what I was hoping actually was he would be paired with Lagesson. I think that might have been fairer for him.
Yeah.
Because he was in tough positions most of the game. Like, maybe if he had been paired with Caleb Jones instead of Bouchard, we'd be saying something different about Bear. But he didn't have enough to carry that pairing, right? Like, right. To be the dominant player and lift up that other player who was super struggling. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would say about him. Kirill Maximov, Bruce.
Your turn.
Down arrow. Mm-hmm. He showed a lot more last year at this dev camp. He made a really spectacular play. He rushed the puck up this right up the middle of the ice. I think he scored on that play, if I'm not mistaken.
Overtime winner, won the tournament.
Spectacular goal and good memory on your part. He,
detail, man. We won the rookie tournament.
He was yippee. He didn't do much. This, like you'd think, Kirill Mack, like you'd think, oh, yeah, that's a fifth round draft pick. He looked like about 20th on our list based on those three games. His feet were not moving. I thought this was actually his best game. He was a little more active this game, but he just was not getting it done. So
a little feistier, eh? He had a good hit, and he had a real good long-standing battle with one of the Flames defender where they took turns chopping each other down. But I noticed him down a few times on the ice tonight. And maybe it's just one of those things, or maybe he's a Hartnell down kind of player. It's something to watch for. But he spent a little bit too much time kind of on his pants in this one game. We did see one example of his quick release against Nate McKeown, and the puck was on his stick and it was in the net, you know, and it was really. I think he had one other shot that the Calgary goalie made a good save off, but it wasn't like he was letting fly three or four bombs a game like he was apparently doing in junior much of last year. I think he's a little bit out of place in the bottom six. Like, I think he's a top six style of player, and that's where he's going to succeed in junior. But whether he's got the chops to make a top six in the NHL is anybody's guess.
There you go. It was kind of like what happened with Ethan Bear, where he didn't get the choice line mates. Other players did. Like, I don't know why it wasn't Maximov on the top line, and what was his, David Gust was on the top line. Like, why are you doing that? Like, if this is foreshadowing on the top power play, they had Gust out there instead of Maximov. If this is foreshadowing for the way it's going to go in Bakersfield, where good player, David Gust, fast, he looked good out there. He was fine, but he's, what is he, 24? Like, he's, play your prospects. And Woodcroft should have played Maximov higher in the lineup tonight, and he didn't do it. And I they've got to break through this reluctance to do that, I think. And there was no reason in the world not to play Maximov with Yamamoto tonight, and he should have been
there. Colin Larkin, who doesn't appear to be much of an offensively gifted player, let's put it that way.
No, I was just trying to, there was another college player they signed a few years ago who really reminds me of Colin Larkin. I can't remember his name right now. Okay, Connor Yamamoto.
I give it a little bit of a down arrow, and mostly not because he wasn't good in those games, but I mean, the number two prospect, you expect him to be a more of a dominant figure than we saw in the in the two games that he played, which were both the Calgary games. And I mean, Calgary had this guy, Dylan Dubé, that every time he was on the ice, he was dangling around people and creating goals and chances and stuff. And Yamamoto had, you know, he had some good moments, and you know, his puck control skills and everything is good, but he really did a little. He was, I thought, okay on Sunday, and tonight, very much a peripheral factor in the game.
Yeah, I'd give Cutter Yamamoto a down arrow as well. We're expecting him to dominate at this level, honestly.
Yeah.
And he's going to go to the AHL. Mm-hmm. And this is, that's kind of like a, that was a kind of equivalent of an AHL game, very similar to an AHL level of talent. These are the two AHL teams, generally speaking. And he just, yeah, he was okay. He had some nice, a couple of nice moments, but he's really got to, he's got to deliver and lead the team like Dubé did for the Flames. And so down
there, I call this a sub AHL game. The top players on both teams are AHL talent, but there's a few hangers on at the bottom end.
And yes,
there wasn't much indication of Yamamoto lighting up those guys on Calgary, whereas Dylan Dubé, as the counterexample, was making the likes of our hyphenated player and our what's the other guy's name? Kulevich, Wilson. You know, like
and Kulevich. Yeah, Kulevich was okay.
He was just more of a factor in the games, and I mean, not that Yamamoto has to cover any one particular guy. I just expected him to be dominant at some point, and I think he got a second assist on one of the goals, and you know,
yeah, I remember my Lark Colin Lark in comparison is Tanner House.
There you go.
Good for about 6 goals a year at the AHL level. Although I thought Colin Larkin was okay. He was hustling like crazy. Like Nolan Vesey was hustling too. Those guys didn't. And Ben Strelin was the other guy. Okay. Evan Bouchard, I'm going to give an up arrow. I thought he was really fine with the puck. Few defensive breakdowns. But man, that guy has got skill moving the puck, and his head's up, and he really is fine when it comes to the offensive game. He's a great shot, and I'm starting to think like this Justin Falk, Evan Bouchard thing. You know, Justin Falk, what did he get? 12 even strength points, and was minus 25. I mean, I don't think we would want Evan Bouchard to be called up and to replicate that kind of season, but I think Evan Bouchard probably could get 12 even strength points and be minus 25 with the Oilers. Now, that's, of course, nothing that you want to happen, but if that's all that Justin Falk's going to get, you might as well like just go with Evan Bouchard, I guess. But
Falk had a particularly down year after 3 straight years of 15-plus goals. He had 8.
Yes.
And most of his damage was on the power play. But I'll give Bouchard a minor up arrow as well. I mean, he was more or less as advertised, with the puck good, excellent passer, good shooter, very cool customer. Like, he doesn't panic that easily for a teenager. And the issues defensively, you know, needing to be a bit more assertive in his own zone. That's something that hopefully we see progress in by the time he's 21, but can't expect him to be. If he's everything at 18, he'd be Rasmus Dahlin, not Evan Bouchard, right? I mean, there's no way you get a number 10 player that's got it all. Or almost no way. Very rare does it happen.
It's interesting. Craig Simpson was on Oilers Now today and just talking about the conundrum of what to do with Bouchard, and mm-hmm. was suggesting that if you can send him to London, but he could develop some bad habits there, like staying out 2 minutes like for power play shifts and just being kind of, you know, too offensive minded perhaps. And that was interesting to hear that perspective. And, you know, the general consensus is send a guy back down, keep him down for development. And but there might be an argument to be made. We'll see how he does. You know, the one argument I think in favor of keeping is the idea that he would be a third pairing guy. Like, he's not going to be like asked if he was to stay around a little longer, like for half the season to see how he did. Let's say he got, instead of just the 9 games, he got the, what is it, the 39 or the 38? Mm-hmm. If he got that, and he was, and the Oilers were winning with him in the lineup, which is the most important thing this year. Might not be a terrible thing, because in soft minutes and power play time, maybe that'll, because the other option is paying a lot of money for a player like Justin Falk and giving up some assets for. So they're going to have to weigh that, and I think that's what they're doing right now. Okay, the Braden Christopher Award, Bruce. Who do you give the Braden Christopher? You know, it's the Braden Christopher. Not, he's still very much alive. So the Braden Christopher Award.
Yeah. We talked about this, and we kind of both picked the same guy, but I'm going to pick a different guy just because I liked his game. Really,
I know who you're going to pick,
and that's Tyler Vessel.
Yeah,
a center playing right wing. Played a lot with McLeod and Benson. They were a very effective line in the first two games. Missing Benson tonight, they were a little less effective. But, man, Vessel, he sure seemed to get into shooting position a lot. And he had the kind of chances. Man, that's where you think if Maximov had those chances, he might have had 3 or 4 goals. And maybe Vessel doesn't have the finish. But, you know, he's got more game than just that. Like, he has some creativity in the offensive zone. But they were using him on the penalty kill. He was blocking shots, which he was actually well regarded for in college hockey. They said he was a good face-off man down there and sort of a 200-foot player. And I think he's going to be a good AHLer. And he's just got the 1-year entry-level contract because of his age. But I think he made a real positive first impression at this camp, that he's a guy that probably Jay Woodcroft's going to be counting on a little bit this year.
I liked him at the end of last year in the AHL games that I watched. The same player that we see now, just a really smart, skilled, hardworking hockey player who doesn't really have the skating to be in it, that makes you think he's going to be an NHLer. But and I think he's an older player too. Is he 23 or 24?
Yeah, I think he is 23, but I'll tell you in a second. He is 24.
Yeah. So he's really got to come in and knock the door down in the AHL this year.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, he's so old that, you know, should they really invest a lot of playing time in him? But I do think in the first year they should. Let's see, give him a year.
Sign him to a 1-year ELC. You might as well see what he's got.
Yeah, let's see what he's got. And maybe he'll surprise everybody and shoot ahead of some of these other players. It's certainly possible. Because he has some game. So the guy that I'm going to go with is Evan Poli, who was the one, we were both mentioning that name. He was dominant against Nate McKeown. Not exactly the toughest competition, but he was also very good, and he scored a nice goal, and he was very good in this game. He showed some confidence with the puck, skating with the puck. He's a big physical guy. I think he's 6 feet, 6'1", 225, 230 pounds. He's got some skill. He hits. Stranger things have happened, Bruce, that a player like that just does not give up and makes the most of every opportunity. Now, he did, Jack Michaels mentioned a number of times on the broadcast that Poli did very well last year as well, which is true. And then he didn't, though, follow through. When I watched the AHL games, he didn't stand out. He didn't play well at the AHL level. See, he's got some, he had a chance there and he didn't make the most of it. This year, he's 22. He's got to do it this year at the AHL level. But he may have made enough of an impression where he's actually, I don't think he was in the AHL conversation, really. I mean, they've got Vessi, Larkin, they've got all these guys. So Vessel, you know, but I think he's going to get a chance down there.
He made a case for himself. You know, I'm just looking at his stats from last year. He played 30 games in Bakersfield and 32 in Wichita. So he really split the season. And, you know, 17 points in the ECHL, only 9 in the AHL. 137 penalty minutes between the two leagues. Like, he's a tough guy, and he'll drop the mitts. We didn't did we see that? I can't remember on Sunday. Anyway, he that's neither here nor there. It's more he's a physical force out there, and he landed at least one booming check in all three. He really crushed a guy tonight in the first period along the end wall in Calgary's zone, one of their defensemen. He just hammered the guy. And then he got an assist, and then he got a goal. And of the things that he does, the hitting I expected, physical presence down near the net I expected, but the calm and reasonably smart and good puck handling was a pleasant surprise. Like he would pass it to a teammate, you know. And oftentimes you see these guys and they're just total plumbers. And that wasn't the impression I got from Evan Pulai.
So what we hear about the NHL exhibition season is it just keeps getting faster. Like this is at a certain speed, then the early exhibition, then the late exhibition, then early in the regular season, and then 10 games, and it just keeps getting faster, faster, faster. So this is the challenge for Pulai. Like last year, he got it. It went faster, and he couldn't keep up. So can he do that? You know, can he find a way, like, you know, because he's like the Scott Hartnell class player, right? That player can find out his a home in the NHL, at least in the old NHL. We'll see in the new NHL. But, of course, his first step is keeping up with the AHL game.
He's a Patrick Maroon type player, and it's the slow boots that are going to hold him back. But if you've got sufficient other aspects to your game, you can still carve out a potentially. I'm thinking he's going to be a good AHLer at the upper level. I'd be very surprised to see him as an NHLer, but you know, at the same time, he was a player. He was very well liked in Red Deer when he played there in junior. I know that within the organization, within the fans, he played through his 20-year-old season. Then he signed only an AHL contract, and then he renewed only an AHL contract. And he's the longest of long shots, but he's the Braden Christopher in the sense of a guy that's really off the radar, who really stood out as playing, you know, real solid hockey over the course of the three games.
All right. Was he even on our list of 38 prospects?
He's an AHL contract only. Okay. Guys on the 50-man list or on the Oilers extended list, you know, guys that have been drafted but not signed yet. Whereas the guys that are AHL only, like Dave Gust is another example, we just omitted them entirely. They're not really Oilers, right? And another team could come along and sign Evan Pulai to an NHL contract, so...
All right, let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking tonight.
All right, and heartfelt thoughts for Humboldt Broncos and their fans, which are, I think, completely across the country and around the world at this point. Very poignant occasion tonight. And, you know, I was so impressed with the broadcasters, the guys at TSN, such pros. Chris Cuthbert and Ray Ferraro, you know, they're consummate pros. And then, of course, the intermission crew, Bob McKenzie and so on, and Ryan Rashog, you know, I wouldn't have been able to handle that job tonight. I mean, there was a few times where I was losing it. And I'm thinking, man, these guys are they're just pros. They really show their class. Like they have empathy for what's going on, and yet they just stick to the task at hand and get her done. And so a shout out for them, but a shout out for the whole Humboldt town and really what we're left with from that tragedy is both the tears, but also the inspiration and some of the lasting impacts, like the organ donor, you know, who the young fellow who signed his organ donor on his 21st birthday, who not only did they use his organs in the manner intended by that program to assist other people, but it also sparked a whole big wave of new people signing up for that program. So you would say that maybe in the end, if you just look at that one thing alone, maybe there'll be more lives saved than lost.
Well said, Bruce. And I've like a lot of Canadians have had a hockey stick out on my porch.
I put my very best game-used Yaroslav Pozar stick out on my deck tonight. My very favorite stick that I have, which is a very small collection, mind you, but he was a particular favorite of mine, and the stick's got to be 35 years old now.
All righty. Thanks again, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.